And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, let's kick off week 15 here. It's Tuesday. Chris Brown along with Matty Glab here on One Bills Live, Tuesday edition. Steve is out of town. He'll be back tomorrow. And I know I thanked you yesterday, Matty, for helping us out. We appreciate it. Here again today. So thanks again. We got to turn the page. We got to turn the page for Monday night. We really do. Or Monday night, Sunday afternoon. I don't want to talk about refs anymore. I don't want to talk about the comeback coming up short anymore. I just want to move on. Let's talk a lot of Carolina today. How does that sound?
That sounds great to me because I don't want to complain anymore about the refs. I am done with it. I may not be over it, okay? I feel everybody out there who is just as disappointed as we are, but it's time to turn the page, just like the team is turning the page onto the Carolina Panthers this week. I spent all morning digging into the stats, so Brownie, I know you have too, so we can kind of start to lay out the picture of what this game is going to look like today.
Yeah, and we will do some of that. We should bring up the news and notes of the day. For those of you living under a rock who do not know yet, Josh Allen is day-to-day with a sprained foot, and coach expressed optimism that he would have a chance to play on Sunday. And it's funny, Matty, because I was rolling this around in my head, saying to myself, if he's iffy come the end of the week, do you play him or do you let him get healthy for the all-important New England game? But right now, each of these last four games is important at 7-6 with where they are. If he can play, he's got to play, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, right now, they're the seventh seed, so they're the last team in the AFC, and they still have a chance at the division if they beat the Patriots and beat the Jets to end the season. So it's hard to put more importance on one game than another as we look at the rest of the season here. And knowing the type of quarterback that we have in Josh Allen, if they give him even a slight green light, Josh Allen is going to play. This is a competitive guy. He does not want to sit on the sidelines and watch his team play if there's a chance that he can be out there. This guy's going to do everything he can to get ready for Sunday.
There is the news is not as good for Emmanuel Sanders. He was labeled as week to week by Coach McDermott. And when somebody gets that designation, it usually means they're going to miss the next game. At least that's been the history. When the week-to-week designation is given to a player, he's got a sprained knee. As we all know, he left the game early last week. Gabriel Davis came in, performed admirably in his absence. And not that people wanted to see Emmanuel Sanders get hurt, but people are excited about the prospect of Gabriel Davis being one of the top three wideouts in their 11 personnel going out there this week. Steve and I have been talking about it for weeks now, that he needed to get on the field more. It's a shame that it comes at the expense of Emmanuel Sanders suffering an injury, but every time he's on the field, good things happen, whether he's blocking in the run game or finding a way to the end zone and putting points on the board for this team.
If there's a position group that has someone go down, I don't want any injuries on this team, but having Emmanuel Sanders or whatever wide receiver were to go down, I think this is the position group that you feel really good about the next man up. Not that we don't have depth at all in this team. We have depth in a lot of areas, but wide receiver is one of our deepest position groups. And we've seen what Gabriel Davis has done when the ball's been given to him, when it's been put in his hands. That fourth down conversion by him was electric, was what the Bills needed on offense to help them get into overtime. So I think this entire team feels really confident about him. And Sean McDermott said it as well yesterday when we heard from him. He was very pleased with how Gabe Davis was rolled into the offense and what he was able to do when his number was called.
Yeah, we will get some comments from head coach Sean McDermott and the coordinators, Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier, a little bit later on in the show, made themselves available to the media late yesterday afternoon. And as we usually do on Tuesdays, we will share with you some of their more notable comments about where they are coming off the heels of the overtime loss to Tampa Bay and looking ahead to Carolina. That'll be probably about 25 minutes from now. We'll get to some of those comments and pass them along to you. The big league news, Maddie, a record 36 players put on COVID reserve Monday league-wide. The Bills had one of their own in linebacker Tyrell Dotson, and now the NFL is requiring booster shots for all Tier 1 and 2 NFL employees by December 27th. I don't think this is a surprise move by the league in light of where things are headed going into the colder months, people indoors more often, and the Omicron variant already kind of spreading to 33 states in this country. So I think coming off the heels of Thanksgiving and an increase in cases there, I don't think they even want to entertain any of that stuff trickling in. But I realize it's got to be collectively bargained, Maddie, but the players aren't part of this initiative that the league is imposing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when the players are required to get that booster shot as well, because if you're trying to keep everybody protected and safe, then the players need to be wrapped into that conversation as well. Just asking Tier 1 and Tier 2 employees to get the booster is a step in the right direction, but the players are also going to have to get it at some point if that's what the CBA and the NFL agree upon. I'm in Tier 2 this year, and a lot of us have already gotten our booster shot, so that's a good thing. Is I would say inside our building, most people who are Tier 1 and Tier 2 status have already gone ahead and done that since it was made available for everybody to do a couple weeks back.
Yeah, and we should mention, too, with Tyrell Dotson on the COVID reserve list, so too is linebacker A.J. Klein. I believe the 10th day for him will be Wednesday, when you hope, provided he's not still showing symptoms or suffering from the effects of COVID, that he can come off the COVID reserve list. But that is very much a wait and see. So if for some reason both of those linebackers are not available come the end of the week, then you could be in a situation where Joe Giles Harris is brought up from the practice squad again, as he has been the last week or so, with A.J. Klein on the COVID reserve list. May have to bring a second linebacker up, in fact, and see where that goes. So that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on as the week unfolds. The Cleveland Browns got placed in advanced COVID protocols today. They're doing all their meetings virtually. So, you know, as we've always said, the virus kind of sets the agenda and everybody else has to react to it. And that's what the league's doing right now. And I hate to say it, but I don't think the Browns are going to be the last team that's going to have to step into advanced protocols between now and the end of the regular season.
Yeah, I know, with this new variant, I mean, good thing that everybody already has a workplace set. They know how to go online and work from home if they need to, or go virtual, since we all did it last season, especially these teams. But at this point, I think the NFL is hoping, let's just get the season in before anything else pops up, because this is definitely something that could rain on some people's parades. And good thing about Tyrell Dotson is he did post on Twitter yesterday and said that he is asymptomatic and he is hoping to have a couple negative tests. And if so, he said he's hopeful that he can play on Sunday.
Yeah, so he's not ruled out yet due to his status, so that's good. And you know, you talk about the NFL dealing with this stuff. I know the NBA has had to cancel a couple of games, a couple of regular season, or postpone them, I guess I should say, because of some COVID outbreaks with some of their rosters. I know in hockey, the New York Islanders had to postpone a couple of games because they had 11 players come up COVID positive. So, yeah, it's something that a lot of the leagues are still dealing with and will probably continue to deal with, certainly through the winter months. The broadcast team on television for Sunday's game, which, by the way, is a Fox game. I know a lot of Bills fans are used to seeing the Bills on CBS. This is a Fox Network game. Kenny Albert, former NFL linebacker Jonathan Vilma, and Lindsey Zarniak will be on the sidelines for this Fox Sunday broadcast of the Bills and the Panthers. It was interesting, Maddie. I saw on Twitter somebody brought up the last time the Bills and Panthers played in this stadium, and it was 2013, E.J. Manuel's rookie year, week two, and with 2 seconds left, he threw a game-tying touchdown pass to Stevie Johnson, and then Dan Carpenter put the extra point up and threw. Crowd was going nuts at the end of that game. It was E.J. Manuel's second career game, and people are like, oh, this guy's on his way. And as we know, that did not happen, but it was still cool anyway, And I know a lot of people remember that game. A lot of people love Stevie also. So just kind of interesting that it's been that long. But, you know, the rotational schedule, it's every 8 years. I'm sure nobody wants a nail-biting finish like that on Sunday. They would certainly take a more comfortable victory instead. And this is a very interesting team, Maddie, because they started 3-0. Everybody's like, oh, Matt Rhule, he's got it together. Sam Darnold, blah, blah, blah. And then they lose 8 of their last 10, including the last 3 in a row. They had a 4-game losing streak and now a 3-game losing streak. It's the wheels have fallen off down there.
Yeah, it's tough. It seemed like this team came out with a bang, especially on defense. And they still rank high in a lot of defensive categories. But what stood out about this team in the beginning was their defense. And, hey, could Sam Darnold kind of revive his career with this team and the pieces that he was given? And the answer is no, at least for this year, because he's on IR, not playing. So now they've gone to Cam Newton and PJ Walker, who Matt Rhule said on Monday that we could see both of them. He said, I'm not going to tip my hand to anything because I want the Buffalo Bills to prepare for both quarterbacks. So the Bills are going to be getting ready for both guys. And this is an offense for the Panthers that has struggled. They're averaging under 20 points a game. So they haven't had points come easily, and they've also turned the ball over at a very high rate. So one thing that I'll be looking at is, we know the Buffalo Bills are high in terms of takeaways, but in the last 4 games, the Buffalo Bills only have 2 takeaways. So hopefully they can get back to multiple takeaways a game in this one.
Yeah, Leslie Frazier addressed that yesterday afternoon when he was asked about that, and they do have to step it up. And we heard Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer talk about it after the game Sunday night. The interesting thing about the quarterback situation in Carolina, Maddie, was Sam Darnold was placed on injured reserve, and they said, oh, he'd be out at least 4 weeks. Well, we're at 4 weeks, but there doesn't seem to be any indication that he's even remotely ready. For those that don't remember, he suffered a fracture of his shoulder blade on his right shoulder and got put on IR back on November 12th. So this would be about 4 weeks now, which was the low end of the range that he was anticipated to be out. Obviously, after 3 games, you're on IR, you're eligible to come back, but it doesn't sound like physically he's even part of the conversation for Matt Rhule. So, yeah, it's basically PJ Walker and Cam Newton. And last week, Newton got 75% of the snaps. Walker got 25%. I would anticipate probably a similar breakdown. I don't know. You're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place if you're Matt Rhule, because, yes, you want to win, because at 6-7, they're still in the race in the NFC. So you're like, all right, let's play the veteran Cam Newton, but he has limitations. So you're like, well, PJ Walker gives us a little more, maybe a little more mobility. It can't be an easy place to be. It's not an easy seat to be in. I mean, it's good that they're still in the hunt, but what are you doing at quarterback?
Yeah, I think it's a tough decision to make. I mean, I would assume, you know, they start with Cam Newton, as Matt Rhule kind of alluded to in his press conference, and then they go from there. If Cam Newton is having some success, maybe they leave him in. But PJ Walker has been getting some time at quarterback. There's just one game since Sam Darnold went on IR that Cam Newton played the entire game himself, and PJ Walker didn't get any snaps. So I would guess that those two will still share some of the load. How much, I guess we'll see on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing to keep an eye on is when the Carolina injury report comes out. And that's because their leading wide receiver, DJ Moore, has a hamstring injury, and he was listed as day-to-day. They anticipate he will be limited in practice. Hamstrings are tough. I mean, especially for high impact, a lot of running, a lot of stop and start positions, you know, like corner and wide receiver, safety, where you have to break, cut, get in and out, because it's the acceleration that causes problems for hamstring injuries. So I don't know. They don't have him in an offense that's got enough problems, let alone a new play caller after they fired Joe Brady a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this we already said the wheels are off in terms of wins and losses, but at the same time, they're still in the NFC race. I just don't know if DJ Moore is going to be able to drag himself out there depending on the severity of the hamstring injury.
Yeah, and if it's not DJ Moore, you're looking at Robbie Anderson as your go-to guy who has 372 receiving yards, and then Amir Abdullah and Chuba Hubbard. So he's got 460 yards on the ground. They're decimated. I was looking up, okay, who are they throwing the ball to right now? Who's getting yards? And it's a bunch of no-name guys. Does this mean they're going to be no-name guys forever? No, but it hasn't been easy for the Carolina Panthers on offense this season. When you look into the stats, when you look at what they've been able to do, it's just been tough. I feel bad for this group almost.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you have these seasons where you're just bit by the injury bug and it just doesn't stop from start to finish. But they're still in the race. That's the crazy thing. And the NFC got even more tightly packed, even at the top, with the Rams beating Arizona last night on Monday Night Football. So, yeah, I think the NFL has officially achieved what it has wanted all along. Just a mashup of teams tightly packed together in both conferences. They have achieved unequivocal parity in this league, and I don't think they could be happier with where it is, which is a conversation that I'm interested in having with Kyle Brandt, who will be joining us in the second hour of the program. Yes, we will go over his hype speech leading into the Tampa Bay game, which was fantastic. And who knows, it almost pushed them over the top of the hill there Sunday afternoon, but they came up a little bit short. But I, you know, we always check in on league goings on with Kyle just for more of a national perspective. So I'll be interested to talk to him about that, because the race in the NFC is quickly becoming almost as tight as it is in the AFC. And people are going to be fighting tooth and nail for every single inch of grass on the field, let alone wins and losses every Sunday.
Yeah, it's been a crapshoot. And listening to Good Morning Football last week, they were trying to figure out, okay, who's going to be the MVP this season? And all of them kind of agreed, have we been at this place in the season where week 13 or week 14, they were talking about it, where we really don't have a true favorite who has been head and shoulders above everyone? And they all had different guys that they were trying to pick in terms of, this guy is worthy of the MVP this year. And thinking back to their options, they're just like, I cannot believe we're at this point in the season where the MVP race is kind of still up in the air at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people were so high on Kyler Murray for a while there through the middle of the season, but then he missed like three games due to injury. So did DeAndre Hopkins. They seemed to do fine without them, although Carolina did beat them pretty handily, 34-10, when they didn't have Hopkins or Murray in the lineup. They beat Cole McCoy and company and got a big win. I think that's their last victory, though, because they lost three in a row after that, I believe. I think that's right. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. I can't remember a time when it was this tightly packed with this many teams in both conferences. So it is very telling. Every team seemingly has some kind of warts that's come up to bite them at the wrong time and handed them losses and made the race tighter. So be an interesting conversation with Kyle in the second hour of the program. Twitter poll conversation today for you. Which is more critical to the success of the Bills offense going forward? We've got choices for you on that at One Bills Live. A, more use of Gabe Davis. B, Josh Allen in the run game. C, offensive line play. Or D, something else. And true to form with Bills fans, they are all in on offensive line play. Almost 70% of the vote out of the gate, Maddie.
Dang. They really want some offensive line play to increase over the next couple of weeks. I figured that was going to be the favorite, but I thought that there would have been a little bit more on maybe other or use of Gabe Davis, but I understand it. Hey, if your offensive line isn't giving Josh Allen the protection that he needs, if it isn't giving the run game the holes that they need, it's tough to do stuff without a good offensive line. And it's been tough for the Bills this season because the injuries have really decimated that line. It's moved things around. Guys have not been as comfortable with each other. And I think back to the beginning of the year when they started to feel some of those injuries. And I just thought it's going to be no big deal this year because last year the same things happened, guys shifted around and it worked for them. This year, it's not the case. This year, they've felt that loss of guys switching around and guys being down due to injury. But hopefully John Feliciano can get back up and back in the lineup here, and it can stay the same five guys maybe to end the season. And hopefully that can make a difference for that group, because if that can, then I think a lot of things can happen on offense positively coming forward.
Yeah. And I mean, if there is one thing that the Bills have faced, you know, with their offense each and every week, it's a healthy share of either a top 10 total defense or a top 10 points allowed defense through the course of the season. I mean, New England, we know, is number one in the league in points allowed, number three in total defense. Kansas City, which was having problems when the Bills played them, they're now sixth in the league in points allowed, as Steve Spagnuolo has rounded that unit back into form. Indy, a top 10 scoring defense, and I mean, Tampa is a number three run defense. Washington, probably the outlier in there. And then there's Carolina. If there's one thing that they have done well, it's performed very well statistically on the defensive side of the ball. Number two defense overall, eighth in points allowed, and first against the pass, just ahead of Buffalo. So this is a defense that could potentially give Buffalo some problems, because their strength is also Buffalo's strength, which is the passing game. So I don't know. And Josh's condition kind of complicates it for me a little bit, Maddie. I'm not saying this is necessarily going to be a tight game, because their offense is admittedly a mess. But I wouldn't be surprised if Carolina is at least able to defensively hold their team in the game for a while.
Yeah, it should be interesting to watch that part of the game. I mean, like you said, it's definitely going to be strength on strength. They've allowed the second lowest amount of passing first downs as well. Buffalo is number one in terms of allowing passing first downs. They haven't allowed too many big plays either. Only 37 plays of 20 or more yards. That ranks fourth in the NFL. And oh, by the way, they have Hassan Reddick, who has 10 and a half sacks right now, which is top 10 in the league.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you want to join us. Which is more crucial to the success of the Bills offense? Choices for you there at One Bills Live on the tweet sheet, or just tell us what you think. Maybe you've got a better idea in terms of what's crucial to the success of the Bills offense going forward. The thing that I've noticed somewhat of a pattern with, Maddie, are the slow starts on offense. I didn't look it up. I meant to before we came on the air today, and I ran out of time. The last time the Bills scored a touchdown on their opening drive of the game, I want to say it's been at least a handful of games, and I'll have to look it up in the break, but it just seems like first couple of series almost every week, I don't want to say they're sleepwalking through it, but they're just not in sync. And then that puts undue pressure on the defense, like, all right, we got to hold this thing down here until the offense can kick it into gear. Obviously, last week it took an entire half, and there have been other examples of that. The second Miami game, where it's 3-3 at halftime because the offense can't get it into gear until the third quarter. And while you're maybe not as intimidated by this Carolina team because they're having their own problems on offense, you don't want to let teams that you know are a lesser opponent than you hang around. That's when you invite trouble. And that's the concern that I have with respect to the offense, that the fast starts just haven't been there of late.
And I think I didn't look up this before we got on air either, but going into last week's game, I saw somebody tweet, when the Bills score on the first drive, I think they're 5-0 or some, it was some stat where they've won several more games than lost games when they score on that first drive of the game. And we talked about it leading into the Tampa Bay Bucs game on our pregame show, how important the rhythm is for this offense and how important it is for Josh Allen to get in that rhythm, find those easy wins, script a couple things out if you need to, so that he can feel like he's in a place where his confidence is high to start the game and start piecing other things together, because the first couple drives of the game were not helpful for the offense or for the defense. They started to get that drive going. I can't remember if it was the third or the fourth drive of the first half where they completed a couple of big plays. It was Emmanuel Sanders had a play of more than 22 yards or 20 yards. And then it was Gabe Davis and then Cole Beasley. And then Josh Allen had a first down on the ground. And it was like, okay, here's the offense. We're getting going now. But then the next drive, it was nothing after that. And finally in the second half, they started to put things together. But when you get into the second half, it's almost too little too late, especially when you're down 24-3. It's about taking advantage of the opportunities you get right away. And I think you couple that, the lack of rhythm that they've had early on, with the lack of the defense's ability to take the ball away in the last couple of games. I mean, two takeaways in the last four games compared to the first four games, this defense had 11 takeaways and led the league in that statistic. So they were giving the ball back to the offense to have more opportunities to score and get that rhythm going. So I hope we see an uptick in these two things, because I think it's super important in terms of getting points on the scoreboard with the chance to win.
Yeah. And while it was good that, you know, they had a decent performance in the red zone, you know, on Sunday, going 3-for-5 down there, you know, they want to be even a little bit better than that. Obviously you want to score a touchdown every time down there, but going against a formidable defense like Carolina's, at least on paper, you know, not only do you have to get into rhythm, you got to finish those drives, ideally with touchdowns. And, you know, I hope they can sustain some of what I felt they recaptured in the second half of the game Sunday. And I know some people argue, and Steve sometimes argues this himself, he says, oh, well, you know, every game is different. You can't really carry momentum from one game into the next. Maybe in other sports you can, because you're playing every other day or you're playing 3 days in a row, you know, with baseball and stuff. He's like, with football, it's different. It's, you know, it's once a week. So he's not a big proponent of carrying momentum from one game into the next. But still in all, you know, I'd like to see the red zone success continue. But you look at Carolina and their defense, surprisingly, is pretty far down the list in terms of red zone defense. I think they're tied for like 26th or something. They're way down the list, which is kind of odd when you think about how good they are in a lot of other defensive categories. But when teams get inside their 20, they have trouble keeping them out of the end zone. So that, I guess, is a good thing for Buffalo.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was looking at too and was surprised about, is their ability to let teams score in the red zone. They let teams score touchdowns 67.6% of the time, which does rank for 26th in the league right now. They're pretty good on third down, on limiting opponents on third down, only letting opponents convert 36.4% of the time, which ranks top 10. But yeah, hopefully the Carolina's lack of ability to defend in the red zone lets the Buffalo Bills continue on with their success that they saw in the second half. And I hope something carries over from the second half, because there was that punch you in the mouth type of football that they were playing, and you could see in their demeanor and their attitude. And I talked about this yesterday. It was like, hello, here are the Buffalo Bills. Here is the team that everybody loves and everybody remembers from points this season, but a lot of last season. It was like they were unstoppable in the second half, and things were working together and they were firing on all cylinders. And I want to believe that you can carry that over into this next game, because that's what they need going forward. And that's what they're going to need to win playoff games. You've got to have it all together. You can't just have one side of the ball working and one side not working. So I really hope that this version that we saw in the second half is going to be the version of this team that we see for the rest of the season into the playoffs.
Yeah, and despite all that success, you know, one of the numbers that popped out like a sore thumb was going 2-for-13 on third down. Like, it didn't really compromise their ability to put points on the board, but it did stall out some drives, most notably in overtime, where they had to punt despite winning the coin toss. So they're going to have to come up with some better winners on third down as well to up that conversion percentage, because the last 2 weeks, Maddie, the Bills are 6-for-26 on third down. That's just not going to get it done.
Yeah, not going to get it done, especially when you're not getting a first down on second down. And when you need those third downs to convert into first downs, I mean, that's so important. They were 0-for-5 converting third downs in the first half of the game against the Buccaneers. And that's a really important part of your game right there. They still rank high, like overall in the season. I think they're still a top five team converting third downs. Yeah, they're third, averaging converting 45.8% of the time. But yeah, when you look at the stats over the last 2 weeks, that has not been the story. And if you want to get into the red zone, if you want to move the ball down the field and move the chains, third downs converting is super important to what this offense can do.
Yeah, and for those of you that can't do math on the fly like me, that's only a 23% success rate. 6 out of 26 the last 2 weeks. Granted, against two very good defenses in New England and Tampa, but you know this Buffalo offense wants to be decidedly better than that. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, as promised, we are going to play some of the more notable comments from head coach Sean McDermott, as well as Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier, the coordinators, on the heels of the Tampa Bay loss and looking ahead to Carolina. We'll get their thoughts next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Chris Brown, Matty Glad with you here on One Bills Live on a Tuesday. And we wanted to pass along some of the comments from head coach Sean McDermott, as well as Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier, on the heels of the Tampa game and heading into this Carolina game in Week 15. It's not a conference game, but it's pretty important now with this race as tightly packed as it is in the AFC. Coach McDermott talked about building off of the second half performance against the Buccaneers.
I think that those moments come in different forms every year for every team in terms of what galvanizes a team a little bit that you can look back on at season's end and say, hey, that was the moment. They're not always just on the field. They're sometimes off the field. It's just every season's a little bit different. I mean, there's things that have happened in my career. I can think of an airplane ride even coming to Buffalo years ago. We were in Philadelphia and it got pretty bumpy. And I think we were had struggled early in the year then, and we came and took this flight and it got pretty touch and go, but I felt it come up here. We won that game and we had a little bit of a different course of a year from there. So it's just things that I think bring a team closer together. Those shared experiences really, Nick, that can do that, that can galvanize a team and just bring it that much closer together. So it comes in different forms probably every season.
All right. So Maddie, I'm not trying to make light of Coach McDermott's comments when I say this, but the first time I'm listening to him yesterday give that answer, he finishes and I'm thinking to myself, is Coach indicating that his team needs to have a near-death experience to have an amazing performance? Because he's talking about that plane like it was going to go down, like it was touch and go, like it's wobbling all over the place in the wind, which if you've lived in Buffalo long enough and you've flown in and out of this city, you know it can happen. It happened when I was flying in yesterday with the windy conditions that we had. So I heard that comment. I was like, what? Did I hear that? What is Coach saying here? It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, he's got a smirk on his face too. I'm like, where is this press conference going right now? But I agree with him in the fact that, like, if you have something that can bring a team together, whether that be something on or off the field, take it, run with it, and keep it going as much as you can. Whether that's a saying, something. I mean, Sean McDermott has had so many sayings, whether it's find a way or trust the process, that we've heard him utter throughout the 5 years that he's been a head coach here. And some people may think it's gimmicky or lame, but it works inside of a team. I mean, you can unite around one thing and believe in that one thing and look to that one thing. And if it's the second half performance against the Tampa Bay Bucs, I'm all in, because whatever it is that helps this team move on and go forward, hopefully getting four more wins to end the regular season, sign me up for it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no secret that maybe NFL coaches more than any other coaches are always looking for anything that will motivate and summon up the enthusiasm in their team to really put it all out on the line every week, because as Steve has told us several times, the amount of emotional and physical energy you have to summon to play at your best in a sport as violent as this is so massive that doing it, you know, now 17 times in a row in the regular season is a big ask. So anything that a coach can latch onto that's going to work and get the players to put their best out on the field on game day, you're taking it every day. Every single opportunity, you're taking that to the bank if you know it's going to work, or even if you think there's a good chance it'll work. Coach McDermott was asked, not surprisingly, about Gabriel Davis stepping up in the absence of Emmanuel Sanders. And here's what Coach had to offer on Gabe's latest performance.
You know, really impressed with what Gabe did when he stepped in there. You know, had some touches before, but you know, obviously that game, his reps went way up, and I thought he was very productive, very detailed in his approach, and he was where he was supposed to be, and he made the plays. I mean, that fourth down was a big time play for us, obviously in a critical moment, and Josh trusted him to be where he's supposed to be, and they connected there. So I think he saw something right there that in a good young player that's got. Upside to him here.
Yeah, so I know a lot of people have been pining for more time for Gabriel Davis. Now he'll get it. And I mean, Matty, I think some people forget, even in spot duty last year, I mean, the guy had 35 receptions, 7 of them went for touchdowns, and he had about 3 that got called back on penalty that would have gone for scores. I mean, he could have been a 10-touchdown rookie last year.
Yeah, him and Steph Diggs would go back and forth and argue about their touchdown total towards the end of the season, because Gabe had so many that were called back. But this is a receiver they trust. This is a receiver that was asked to learn every single position by Brian Daboll in his rookie season. You talk to any offensive player on this roster, including Josh Allen, they are asking for him, wanting him to get more playing time. They understand, hey, here's how it goes in terms of, you know, Steph and Emmanuel and Cole and the touches and the targets they're getting because of their ability to play and their ability to get first downs and play good football. But Gabe Davis is right there with them. And Gabe has been, when he's been asked about the subject, his answer has been, you know, it's tough, but I will be patient and wait my turn and wait for when my name is called. And here's his turn. His name has been called. Let's see what he can add in terms of a spark to this offense.
Much was made of Buffalo's offensive approach in the first half Sunday in Tampa, especially when it was pretty much revealed on the halftime stat sheet that not a single running back carry had been made by the Bills. Josh had 4 carries for 43 yards, I think it was, at halftime, and 3 of those were scrambles. So arguably there was only one run play called the entire first half, a design run for Josh. So Brian Daboll was asked about that plan in the first half against the Bucs and why a running back didn't touch the ball once out of the backfield.
I mean, there's different ways to, you know, you can turn and hand it off and let them run into that line of scrimmage, which, you know, they were, you know, top 2, if not the best, under 80 yards. So, again, you try to be creative and find ways to either tire a line out or get the ball on the perimeter and use RPOs or quarterback run game or quick drop back or perimeter screens. So, you know, we were going to be aggressive. You know, that was the mindset going into it. You know, got behind the chains a little bit there in the first half, had a couple really 3rd and longs, but the guys battled, did a good job. And, you know, I think Josh made good decisions in terms of the running game, you know, when to throw it and when to hand it off.
So, I mean, even though on the stat sheet, Matty, it says 0 carries for running backs in the first half, which I think I saw was the first time that's happened in an NFL game since 1991. It sounds as though there were some RPOs, you know, read pass options for Josh to make the decision. And more often than not, obviously, he chose to throw the football.
And I think against the Bucs defense, the writing was on the wall for how they would approach the run game in this one. The Bucs being a top three team in terms of stopping the run, only allowing, I think, just over 80 rushing yards a game going into that game. So I figured there wouldn't be much of a run game, but I did not think that they would, a running back wouldn't run the ball in the first half. But in the second half, the running backs end up totaling 64 rushing yards. I mean, Devin Singletary averages 13 yards per carry, which is a pretty good number for him. He got loose on a couple of those plays and also played a part in the passing game as well, catching some of those short passes from Josh Allen. So we'll see what's ahead for this group. I mean, I wouldn't expect the same thing next game, because I do think there is some value into getting Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, Matt Breida involved, because I think we kind of saw how it opened up the offense in the second half. Maybe it wasn't the reason why the offense started to get going in the second half, but it surely played a part.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't debate that for a second. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, the defense also played better in the second half. They held the Bucs to 110 total net yards and just 3 points over the final two quarters before the overtime play. So here is Coach Frazier, who said, you know, part of the reason why we struggled to give our offense more opportunities is because we didn't take the ball away. As Maddie pointed out, that's kind of dried up lately for the Bills in their last few games. So here's Coach Frazier on the importance of getting back to takeaway football on defense.
That's something that we have talked about as a staff earlier today, and we need to get back to taking it away. It would have made a big difference yesterday, and we got to find ways to get it done. You know, we'll continue to work on it in practice. We'll continue to talk about it. And as you know, sometimes they come in bunches, and once you get a couple or get one, they kind of snowball from there. So we're hoping that this coming weekend, you know, we can get back on track with taking the football away. This could be the weekend to get us started.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there are advantages that the Bills can take here defensively and manifest them into takeaways. And what I mean by that, Maddie, is logic tells you that whenever you're platooning quarterbacks and rotating them in and out of the lineup, there can be more miscommunication and a disconnect between the quarterbacks and their receiving targets. You know, a miscommunication on a play, but wow, this guy's in now instead of that guy. Well, I feel more comfortable with him. What does he mean? Is he giving me a look telling me to break this in because of how this guy's playing me leverage-wise? So I think there are going to be greater opportunities for maybe a little bit of miscommunication out there on the field with Carolina rotating quarterbacks. Maybe that turns into more opportunities for the Bills' DBs.
And I would hope so, because if you look at the stats, I mean, the Carolina Panthers have 23 turnovers. That ties for 29th in the NFL. So quite a high number right there. Their turnover margin is -8, which is 28th in the NFL. So this is a team where if you're going to take the ball away and do it multiple times in a game with the ability of them to rotate through quarterbacks here and their lack of weapons that they have available right now, I mean, this defense should be able to take advantage of that situation. And Dane Jackson had a good game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I would expect him to also play good games going forward. He was close on a couple plays last game. Maybe he can get an interception in this one.
Yeah. Hopefully that is the case. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, what is Bill Belichick using to get better prepared for the Indianapolis Colts this weekend, and a battle between the Buffalo and Tampa Bay airport on social media? What in God's name is going on now? We'll let you know next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Inside the Numbers, brought to you by the New York Lottery. Go to buffalobills.com/prizepacksack to win $100 in New York Lottery scratch-offs and a signed football. The Bills now have 363 points this season, the fifth highest total through 13 games played in franchise annals. Only years with more were 1975, 1991, 1964, and 1990. So despite all of the criticism that this offense has faced through the course of the year, whether it's run game, red zone, anything, somebody not playing like Gabe Davis, still fifth highest point total through 13 games. Not too shabby. Maddie, I don't know if you saw this, but obviously after yesterday's show, which you were a part of, you heard the full-on angst of Bills fans with respect to the lack of penalty calls in favor of the Bills and the penalty calls that went against Buffalo in the overtime loss to Tampa Bay. Well, that spilled over into the Twitter handles of the Tampa airport and the Buffalo airport. So this is Monday early. The Tampa International Airport says, oh, and safe flight home to all the Bills fans with a slightly sad face, to which the Buffalo airport responds, check your lost and found, Tampa airport. All the penalty flags seem to have gone missing. Winky face. So it's reached that level. I laughed out loud when I saw it.
That's a pretty good burn right there by the Buffalo airport. They're actually pretty active on Twitter and have some hilarious tweets. So if you have some time to spare, I would go check out Buffalo Airport's Twitter account, because it does bring some laughter into my life, especially after seeing this tweet. I was like, oh, did they just go there? They definitely went there. So
yeah.
Way to go, Buffalo Airport, protecting us Bills people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of Bills Mafia are going in and out of that airport during the season. So good move on their part. To kind of support the cause, so to speak. This did not surprise me in the least when I saw this, Maddie. Bill Belichick using Hard Knocks to prepare for the Colts. So obviously the Colts are having the first edition of Hard Knocks in season. Most of the time it's done during training camp, or every iteration of it before this done has been during training camp. So they're Hard Knocks in season. And there are more things that go on, obviously, during the season behind the scenes that are probably more valuable for opponents to maybe cling to and make some use of when they play that team in a given week. And Bill Belichick did not deny that he's got his minions combing through each and every episode of the Colts Hard Knocks series. And he said, we track most everything any team that we play does. Depending on the relevance or importance of that information, at some point it gets relayed down the line. We have somebody that studies each team. Any relevant comments or information that we think is relevant to the preparation that could be shared, sure, we will use it. What do you think of that?
Is he going to find out that, like, Carson Wentz likes Cinnamon Toast Crunch for breakfast, so they're not going to have any of that in the locker room for him or something?
No, I think the root of this, it comes in what the players say and certainly what Frank Reich says, because I know earlier in the season, Jacksonville head coach Urban Meyer, Frank Reich actually took a comment that he said in a press conference and took note of it in terms of their preparation for the Jaguars defense. And what Urban Meyer said was basically, we are slowly morphing into a zone principle defense. And when he heard that, he's like, oh, red flag. All right, we might be getting more zone going forward here from a defense that we thought might play a little more man. So we have to take that into consideration when formulating the game plan, and certainly the opening script of plays that Frank Reich makes use of. So I thought that was a very interesting admission that, you know, that Coach Reich is admitting that. I think that explains a lot of the time why so many coaches are very guarded with their comments during the week. You know, you hear the media say sometimes, well, I wish we got a better answer on that. This is why. This is why we don't get more forthcoming answers, because they're afraid they're spilling some kind of state secret to the opponent.
No bulletin board material coming out from anywhere this time of the year, especially with how few weeks left are in the season. But yeah, I mean, you hear our players say that a lot when they're asked questions, that an answer could lead to the saying the wrong thing. And we've heard players walk things back where they'll think, they'll be like, actually, I'm not even going to go there. I don't want to give this team any bulletin board material. So everybody's pretty careful about what they say and what they do. So I guess I get it, Bill Belichick, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm not surprised in the least that those are the lengths they go to. There were rumors over the years that they would send a team rep to go scout other teams' training camp practices, because if admission is free, you can send your minions, you know, somewhere else and go take in the practice, and everybody's got a phone. I mean, who knows what kind of video they're shooting, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is small potatoes compared to some of the other things that people suspect the Patriots of doing. And they'll be coming up on the schedule here in the not-too-distant future. We have to take a break because coming up next is the weekly appearance from Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt. We'll talk to him about his thoughts on formulating the hype speech that aired on Sunday before the Bills-Bucks game when he called out Bills Mafia to mount up once again. And we'll get a feeling from him on this ultimate parody season that the NFL is, with jam-packed playoff races now in both the AFC and the NFC. It's Kyle Brandt coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
And it's Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, kicking it off. Hour number two. Chris Brown, Matty Glab with you. And we are joined by Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt, as we are every Tuesday. Kyle, good to have you here. We first should applaud you for the yeoman's effort with the hype speech over the weekend, NFL on CBS. Well done there. I think you inspired them. Apparently, though, they didn't watch it until halftime. at least that's the word we're getting. Because, I mean, everything turned around after that. But, yeah, just coming up a wee bit short. And it's kind of a heart ripper for Bills fans, especially those that made the trip to get out of the weather up here and enjoy some sunny days in Florida there. But good job
strange
on your
times
part.
Strange right now, Brian.
Yeah.
Strange times. A strange emotional time for a lot of fan bases. But I would think for Buffalo, too. And I'll listen. I know you guys have a very specific perspective and the real authentic perspective locally. I can only sit from where I am and say, man, these Bills fans are pissed off.
Yeah.
I mean, really mad about a lot of things. I think they're mad about how the season's going. I think they're mad about the officiating. I personally, a lot of them are mad at me. Everybody's just mad and looking for a pound of flesh somewhere and somebody to blame. So please be mad. You've lost 4 out of 6 games. And if you ask a lot of these fans, they didn't really lose this one. It was taken from them. So, I mean, Brian, we've been doing this thing about 3 years now.
Yeah.
It's been some good times. People are pissed. And there's 4 games left. We can work on it.
Yeah, they're ticked. And it's not good. And, you know, Matty and I were both on the show yesterday, and the collective angst is palpable. You know, you can see it. You can feel it. You can cut it with a knife. I think the biggest issue, and then we'll stop talking about officials here, because I know you say that's the talk of losers. The last thing we will say about it is this argument. I think it's a decent theory, and I brought it up yesterday. Stephon Diggs, I think, is considered an A1 level receiver, and those are the kinds of players who more often than not get the benefit of the doubt and those kinds of calls. And there were 2 chances for officials to get it right and do right by him, and they did not. And I think that sticks in the craw of Bills fans, maybe more than anything else with regard to that conversation.
It's two-pronged, isn't it? It's 1, you didn't give us the call. And 2, it's you insulted our guy by insinuating that he's not a big enough star to get the call.
Right.
And would Davante Adams have gotten that call? Would Tyreek have gotten it? Would Gronk or Kelsey have gotten it? Probably. The one that drove me crazy, these ones, the digs were bad enough. I openly hated the one with the Mike Evans play on the far sideline, because Mike Evans did some crafty nonsense there that the refs completely fell for, in which he grabbed the defender, pulled him into him. It is just like going, like being a six-year-old and taking someone's fist and pushing it into your face and being like, he punched me. No, I didn't. You punched yourself with me. Like that, it was he, the full clothesline, drag it into me and then interfere. And it was that terrible, thick, turgid pause before the flag came out. Like I'm thinking, and I'm going to throw it. It's unbelievably frustrating. So you know how I feel, Brownie and Maddie, about this. I think you have your moment of shock and anger when the calls don't happen or they do happen. But then you've got to turn that officiating page. It is unbecoming as a fan base, as a human species, to sit there and whine and moan about the officiating. It never helps anybody. Point to someone who spends an entire offseason saying, man, the officials just did us in. And I will show you a loser. That is the lament of the loser, to sit around, initially get mad, fine, but to dwell on it and just, man, if we had just gotten a few calls. The Bills got housed in the first half. I believe that's the reason they ended up losing this game, because they didn't have enough at the end. So I could not feel more body language coming from you, Brown, that you are so sick of talking about the officiating. I've now puked it all over the show again.
That's
I'm ready
okay.
to move on. Maddie, if you are, maybe we should all take our own advice and move on.
All right, let's turn the page. I am doing it. No more complaining and whining about what happened in week 14, because after the season is over, are we going to look back and be like, oh, you remember in week 14 when the refs sucked against the Buccaneers and we didn't win the game?
You
no, we're not going to say that. So, based on what you saw of the Bills' last game against the Buccaneers, first half, second half, we saw a different team. Do you still have faith that the Bills can be contenders in the playoffs following the loss to the Bucs?
Absolutely, because they have one of the Avengers at quarterback, and this is a quarterback league. I remember we talked last week, and we were saying, you know, should they just say screw it to this whole running game? Should they just kiss it off? It's a square peg in a round hole, and we've sat here for 13 weeks saying, do the Bills have the running game? Maybe they just say, don't run. And then miraculously, for the first time in like 30 years, they went a whole first half without any running back runs. Allen looked incredible running it. I honestly think they found something. There is no tablet, no stone tablet that comes down from Mount NFL that said, you must have a running game. You must. I know it's ideal and it helps. They tried for 13 weeks. They can't run it. When they decided to stop running it outside of Allen, they went up and down the field against the world champs. So, yes, I still believe in them. They have a quarterback who can go for 300 and 100. He's a top five guy in the league. And they might have even found an identity in the second half. And listen, I don't know if it's enough to win the Super Bowl. I don't know if you can win three or four playoff games in January in outside atmospheres without much running. But I know you can beat the Carolina Panthers. And I know you can beat the Falcons. And I think you can beat the Patriots. Unless they play the Patriots again, and it's seemingly 200-mile-an-hour winds, I still think they're a better team with a better quarterback. I think that's how it's going to go.
Yeah, and that's the thing. While you may not subscribe to Josh Allen doing everything as a long-term, sustainable approach on offense, you got to do it now. You got to win games, and you only got four left here. So the margin, the margins for error, they're gone. You got to do anything you can to scrape, claw, and everything else to win a football game. He is your best player. The problem is he's now got a sprained foot and might be a little iffy through the week. I mean, Coach expressed optimism that he'd have a chance to play on Sunday, but that could throw a whole wrench in the works.
Well, I look at it this way. If you're going to go down, if that does happen, and I still think that they'll win. I think they're going to probably win three out of four to finish the season. I really do. If you're going to go down, do you want to go down with Josh Allen going crazy, or do you want to go down handed to Singletary and Matt Breida? Like, due respect to those guys. Those are good pros and talented guys. I think we saw something in that second half that you have a seminal player here with an incredible talent. I don't even care if he isn't a walking boot. I still think that's their best offense. I really do. How frustrating has it been to see them slog through this running thing? Yeah. Wasn't the second half intoxicating and refreshing? And the football gods are shaking their finger at it and saying, how dare you do this? You must establish the run. Screw you. Like, we're trying to win here. We're down three touchdowns. We have a great quarterback. Why would we run? We're not going to. I think I don't care if it's sustainable for the next year or the next decade. How about the next 6 weeks? Can we just unleash the guy and just have him Hulk out? I think we can.
I think a lot of people walk away from the Bucks loss not feeling too bad because of how this team played in the second half and the type of team we saw in the second half. I mean, inject that into my veins with what the Buffalo offense and defense was able to do. And there's a lot of talk about taking this momentum into the rest of the season. Do you believe a team can take a sort of momentum or approach or mental mindset into several games after what they did in one game?
I hope so. And I think the short answer is yes, Maddie. I was listening to, I just saw a clip from Dawson Knox, who is my favorite player on the team and who looked amazing and who I thought was going to score on that catch and run at the end of the game. And I saw, and he was just singing about number 17. That's our general. That's our fearless leader. We believe in him. Listen, it could be that in that second half, despite the loss, they pushed the world champs and shocked them. Like, Brady was shook in that. And Milano's all over him, and he's throwing bad incompletions, and he made a play at the end, and he's Brady, and he's great. They pushed the champs to overtime. Brady doesn't blow leads like that. He doesn't blow 21-point leads. They did it. And if you can take something from a loss about, man, we might have found something today, and that was maybe like the most badass loss we've seen by this team in the last 10 years, maybe they can. And maybe they open up a 40-point win on Carolina. I don't know. But it's Carolina. And then it's go to Foxborough. Yeah. So there's no rest for this team. I do believe they found something in that second half, though, and I think that they were inspired as hell. I was watching.
So you look at the 5-8 Carolina Panthers, losers of eight of their last 10, currently on a three-game losing streak. Their offense is in shambles. They're platooning quarterbacks. They're firing coordinators. And you're like, all right, this is, you know, ripe for the taking. What do they have to play for? They're still in the playoff race in the NFC. And then Arizona loses last night to tighten things up over there. Kyle, have the NFL executives achieved the ultimate in NFL parity? Because I cannot remember a time going into week 15 that we only had, what, four teams eliminated from playoff contention in the entire league in week 15?
No, it's amazing. And that's, you know what I like most about it? There's going to be like an asinine team that makes the playoffs. Like an unconscionable team will be in the playoffs. And I'm looking at, like, we could have the Eagles in the playoffs. We could have the Saints. We could have the Raiders. We could have the Dolphins.
Yeah.
They're like the laughing stock of the league. It could happen. And it never mind could. It's going to happen. There is going to be a hilarious team in the playoffs. And not just hilarious, because we've seen, you know, the 7-9 team that gets in. We've even seen them win. But just like a woe-be-gone, awful Jay Leno monologue punchline type team from September and October will be in the playoffs this year. And it's just spin the wheel and pick which one. Like, for example, I still think like the Vikings have a thing to say in this, the NFC, because their ceiling is so high. I'm fascinated to see how the Eagles are going to be coming off a bye. Like, they run the ball well, and like they got this kind of kooky coach they believe in. The Eagles and the Vikings, like the Vikings lost to the Lions, and I still think they can make the playoffs.
And I want to take this point a step further. A couple weeks ago on Good Morning Football, you guys were talking about the MVP race and how at week 13 or week 12, whenever it was, you guys were like, this thing is still wide open. Uh-huh. I cannot remember one point or one year where we were heading into week 13 and we couldn't crown a true MVP guy right now because of how wide open it is. Maybe because Kyler Murray went out for a couple weeks or because the up and down play of the quarterbacks, but this year has just kind of been all over the place.
It's really fun. And I think we got a little dollop of clarity last night. I mean, breaking news, Kyler Murray is not winning the MVP. It's a fun story. He's a really fun player to watch. He's crazy talented. In a couple of nationally televised games, he threw a game-ending interception against the Packers. Then he threw two against the Rams. He's young. He hasn't put his time in, quote unquote. I don't think they're going to vote for him. I think he lost it last night. Great player. I don't relish saying it, but I think he lost it, which means you have the Rodgers thing, which very deserving, very excellent. And when he was out for one game, the Packers completely fell apart. But I think there's going to be a huge voter prejudice against him for a myriad of reasons, all of which are off the field. And then you got, you know, the golden boy in Tampa, who also has, I think, kind of the Michael Jordan factor working against him, where it's like, we're going to give it to this guy, like, again? I think he might be deserving, but how many times do I have to vote for it? He might win it, because I've never bought the Jonathan Taylor thing. The running back's my favorite position in the league, but I just don't think it's short of a 2,000-yard season on a runaway playoff favorite, neither of which is going to happen for the Colts. TJ Watt seems to be hurt. I don't think that's happening. I'm very charmed and supportive of the Cooper Kupp thing. It's really cool, But again, I think for him to do it, it would have to be like, oh, the Rams are 15-2 and he broke Jerry Rice's record. Maybe he deserves it, just a matter of whether he'll be getting it. So I guess that's my long way of saying, good God, I think it might be Brady again. Yeah. I don't vote, but I only read the tea leaves. I think it might be him again. I'm sorry, but yeah. I'm sorry.
You danced around it for a while, and I know why you did that, because you're on Buffalo Airways. I totally get it. Nice job, Kyle.
The wound is that fresh. Was, what was, am I supposed to do, pour lemon juice on it, Brown? Like,
yeah, put some lemon juice on it. Have fun storming the castle.
Sorry.
I do think, though, in our very candid conversation here, we came up with a show idea for you guys, so you're going to have to talk to your producers about this. I seriously think you should spin the playoff wheel of fun. You should just get a giant wheel, spin it, and just have silly team makes the playoffs, and then one each of you discuss the merits of why it's not impossible for team A, B, C, D, X to get in. So spin wheel, spin. Bring Sajak in if you need to.
Ronnie, you know how we were saying that the Bills fans should be offended that Stephon Diggs does not get the star calls? I'm offended that you think the Good Morning Football program does not have a bedrock of hard news, very serious coverage, and that we would result to hijinks like a spinning wheel. It's actually a great idea, and I'm going to email the producers right now. We should do it. I'll give you credit, Ronnie.
Spin wheel, spin. I mean, just let it go. I mean, heck, you got, who was it, Rachel Bonetta in football pads to cue you for angry runs. I mean, a wheel with potential crazy playoff teams. I mean, that's like 2 degrees better than that, like in terms of craziness.
And you know who we got now? Do you guys see it?
Yes.
We got Brian Baumgartner's in at the table, like Kevin from The Office, the accountant, is in today. He's in tomorrow. And not like as a guest. He's sitting there in the Burleson seat, like giving his thoughts on the Rams running game. And he's excellent.
He's good. I'm just, I just think it should have been a prerequisite that Chili had. You guys had to be lapping up Chili on set, at least for one segment. I mean, at least one point.
I know. And somebody made the terrible joke that Kevin's chili is what really gives you the angry runs. And I said, how dare you? How dare you defy my segment like that? It's disgusting and deplorable and literal potty humor. So there's lots of ideas bouncing around.
All right.
Oh, my gosh. I've got to say, I do watch that chili scene. Anytime I'm feeling down, you just cue it up on YouTube. It definitely makes you laugh. But since we're talking about just how crazy this NFL season has been, do you have a crazy take to take us into the last 4 weeks of football that we're going to see?
Well, I guess, Maddie, the last 4 weeks, the crazy take would be, well, it's kind of, we kind of have to probably reference to that just wild AFC that we've been looking at. That, you know what, the two teams that are most fascinating to me, and I don't know how crazy to take this is, it's just two teams, and they're twin brothers, and it's the same team, just with different colors, and it's the Chargers and the Bengals. Like, they're very, very amusing and entertaining to me because both of them just feel like they're a little like prepubescent. They're in their adolescence. Like, they're not quite adults yet. You can see that they're talented. And if you watch them work out in the gym, they got those huge feet and you know they're going to grow into them. And they're going to, like, the head varsity coach is like, keep an eye on those Bengals and those Chargers. But they're just not ready. They're so mistake prone. They're so erratic. They kind of got that like wild Labrador feel to them. So I guess the craziest take would be, one of those figures that out in the next month and like has some, like, I wonder if we're going to be sitting here when the AFC title game happens and someone blows our mind that they're playing in it, you know, never mind Buffalo or Kansas City or any of these other teams. Like, could we be sitting here and Cleveland is in the title game? I doubt it, but the AFC is so strange and it's such a bizarre mix of ups and downs that I think somebody, again, asinine to seemingly like the Chargers could be in the title game this year. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say the Chargers and Bengals, even though you put the image in my head that you're just learning how to shave, they they have quarterbacks that can do it. I mean, between Joe Cool and Justin Herbert throwing rocket balls 60 yards in the air, they have that. The Browns don't. I'm sorry. I mean, Baker Mayfield's a tough-as-nails kind of player, but to me, he's just not it. They have everything else that they need. I don't know that they have the quarterback.
The AFC North is so hard. I was asked that question on the show yesterday. Who's going to win the AFC North? I don't know. I have no idea. What do you think? Here's where I go, though. If you can't pick a team, and I can't, you got to start eliminating teams. Try to do it that way. So I look at it this way. The Steelers' defense against the Vikings the other night was the worst I've seen it in my entire adult life, maybe my entire life. It was just they didn't even show up. And TJ Watt's banged up. I can't pick Pittsburgh because of that. I'm looking at Baltimore. Lamar seems to be banged up. And even if he's not – if Lamar's at 95%, I think that's a problem because he just does everything for that team. I need him at 100. So put Baltimore out. Cincinnati just lost two straight home games in December. Like, playoff teams don't do that. They just don't. So, Brownie, like, I'm sitting here. I'm trying to think of why Cleveland would be the team. They have Garrett and they have Clowney, and both of them looked ferocious last week. And it's like they – That game last week, it looked like they had two TJ Watts. And I know Baker is totally flawed. They run and they have a pass rush. And so just by default, which feels so lame and backhanded, I have to pick Cleveland.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. Because I can see how you get there. I can.
Who do you like? Who's your champion?
In the AFC?
AFC North.
Oh, AFC North. I'm a Burrow guy. I'm on board, man.
No kidding.
They're flawed. I mean, there's no question they're flawed. Protection is still an issue. I mean, they can't even protect him well, and he's still doing all of this. And I think their defense is a little better. If Hendrickson's out for, I mean, I think it was just back spasm, so I think he's back.
Yeah.
I think they have a better pass rush than they get credit for. And to me, Burrow is nails. When the game gets tight, I mean, he's loose as a goose, man. So I just like his moxie. I think it lifts the level of play of the guys around him. And while I agree with you, I think they are, you know, the big Labrador puppy that has not grown into it. I don't know if they're smart enough to realize they're not supposed to be there, if you know what I mean.
I do. Sometimes you see those young teams are like, what the hell are you guys doing here? I just think, look, they've lost two straight. We love them.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. I feel like the Bengals have this optics thing, what's great for them. It's like, they're like a Fast and the Furious movie. Like, it's really exciting and we got great highlights and sexy people, but like, is it that good really? I don't really know. It's like a Mountain Dew commercial or something. It's just so much energy. You got to win.
Either that or they're driving off the cliff.
Yeah. Like when they're jumping out with a parachute or something, like it's a lot of that. Like, they're very exciting, but like, we got to get some wins here in December. Yeah. More than exciting.
Well, listen, Kyle, I think we've allotted our time with you. So we thank you for it. And, give the Buffalo Airport Twitter a follow. I know Maddie follows them. They're pretty entertaining. And as long as football season's going on, they'll probably have something of interest for you. So keep an eye out for them.
That's great. I didn't know airports could be funny. I'll be looking forward. Look at that. Buffalo Airport. Check your lost and found. All the penalty flags seem to have gone missing. Wink emoji. And I just can't wait until the local DMV starts weighing in with their one-liners. Then we know we've really arrived. Thank you, guys.
Well, yeah, we will have jumped the shark at that point in time. Kyle, always a pleasure. We'll catch up with you Christmas week. Get your shopping done, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
All right, my friends. Go Bills. See you later.
Yep, we'll see you. That's Kyle Brandt joining us here on One Bills Live, as he does each and every Tuesday. How are you doing, Maddie, with your Christmas shopping? I'm in good shape for the most part.
I am not in good shape. I'm in terrible shape. I realized how much I have to accomplish this weekend. I'm not excited about it. I'm trying to be good and do like all my shopping locally. So that means that I need to go in and out of a lot of stores this weekend and find some winners. So we'll see. We'll see how I do.
You're better than me. I'm an online shopper 100%. But we have to take a break here as we leave you with the AFC playoff picture, which is very jumbled. And it is very troubling to see Miami at 6-7. I thought we had left them for dead. But here we are in week 15, and it's still a very tight race with Miami just a game out. Unbelievable. You could have asked 1,000 people in week 9. When they were like 2-7, and they would have said, no way, Jose. But here they are at 6-7, a game behind Buffalo. Just absolutely nuts. We'll talk more about that. We'll also get to the tweet sheet, as we will try to find out from you your thoughts on which is more crucial to the success of the Bills offense next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, time for some Reed's Milestones, presented by Reed's Gens, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen, just the fourth NFL quarterback and first Buffalo quarterback to record over 300 passing yards and 100 rushing yards or more in the same game. He joins Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, and Lamar Jackson as the only other quarterbacks to complete such a feat. And a feat it was, most definitely. Time now, though, for our latest installment of Coffee with the Bills, presented by Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. It is our own Matty Glab, joined by the Pit Boys, Dane Jackson and DeMar Hamlin.
Matty Glab here with Dane Jackson and DeMar Hamlin, two guys in our secondary who are younger on this team. We have another episode of Coffee with the Bills presented by Tim Hortons. Guys, I have a couple questions to see how well you know each other since we've got the Pittsburgh connection here. When did you guys meet for the first time, and what has the relationship been like since you guys first met and then went to school together too?
Like, we're from the same side of town, but there's a few teams over there, and he played for Still Rocks, I played for West Pittsburgh, and they came over to, it's like a literally like a little small bridge that you cross over, and our field is right there, and their field is right on the other side, but like they came over and we had a scrimmage that, and I think that was one of the first times we met.
Were you guys friends before that, or was it really once you started playing at Pitt together that you were like, all right?
Yeah, our side of town is really like, it's not that big, so you pretty much know a lot of people that's from that side of town. So we knew each other pretty much since that and on. Getting to Pitt, he was a year ahead of me.
Yeah.
So just having him there, just basically being able to like show me the ropes, just what to do, what not to do. Just also the same process as being here.
Were you recruiting him to the Bills, Dane?
Nah, it's out of our hands. So.
No, okay. Who had more interceptions at Pitt?
He did.
I'm gonna say me.
Yeah.
How many did you have?
Five or six.
You had six. Dane, you had four.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We're off to a good start here.
Yeah.
What was Dane's first job? Multiple choice here. A, did he work at Subway? Did he work at a bowling alley? B, or C, was he the world's best babysitter?
He wasn't no babysitter. I'm going to say that right now. There's one bowling alley in Crafton. I'm going to go with Subway.
Subway? Dane, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you have a favorite sandwich to make? I mean,
nah, I think I was spicy Italian. Yeah, that was my go-to. Spicy.
Were you at work for the money or for the free food?
Yeah, my first job was Chick-fil-A. I was there for the free food. I ain't gonna lie.
That is a good first job. What was DeMar's first job? Was it A, he worked at a shoe store? B, he worked at a pet store, you know, playing with puppies and cats, you know, big, big pet lover over here. Or was it C, he worked at a cleaning business?
Probably too young to work at a shoe store.
Chop some things down.
Yeah, I'll say cleaning business.
Okay.
There it is.
Yeah.
It's my parents' cleaning business. It was something my father had started. And, you know, me and my mom, we was really just managing and running it, something I had to do young. That I really didn't want to have to do, just coming home from school, practice.
DeMar, this one is for you. What's at the top of Dane's bucket list? Is it A, being a commentator for an NFL game, you know, snorkeling, or C, learning how to ski?
Come on, bro, that's an easy one.
See, Dane been in Buffalo for a year around all this snow and all of this, you know, beautiful temperatures. You might want to ski now, you know, but I'm going to go with, he's trying to snorkel.
You see how he did that? He talking about he might want to ski. That's wrong. So that's wild.
He wants to eat snorkeling.
I mean, I just want to get down there and explore a little bit. You know, we don't know like 95% of our ocean. You know, I just
want to be the one.
I want to be the one.
What is DeMar's favorite food? Is it strawberries, you know, big fruit guy, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or is it C, chicken wings? Come to Buffalo, get your wings. What do you think it is? Are these questions too easy?
That's too easy.
Oh, my gosh. These guys know each other.
I always walk around with a little cup of strawberries, so it can be that. It can be that.
Who knows?
That might be true. But this dude is a wing guy.
He's a connoisseur.
And I'm going to give you another one. Hot wings.
I need it.
That's his thing.
Buffalo joint.
Are you like a medium guy or do you actually go for the hot in Buffalo? Because hot in Buffalo is like hot, hot, hot. It's not like just hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, see that hot, hot, hot? I'm going to stay far away from that over there. I started a wing review series that I did one episode of so far.
Did you have another comment on?
Yeah, I gotta tell the people back home that he's becoming a blue cheese guy. So y'all gotta watch out for this dude.
Man. He's lying.
He's a blue cheese guy.
Are you a blue cheese guy now, Dane?
Never, Maddie. Never.
I started off as a ranch gal myself, but
blue cheese.
The blue cheese tastes different here. There, you can't lie.
Said the same thing.
We'll finish off with this question. What's the best part now being teammates here in Buffalo?
I think the best part for me is just like the history we got. You know, I mean, that's obvious, but it's like just coming up with somebody you grew up with, somebody from the same side of town. Your high schools wasn't that far from each other. You went to the same college, and now you're on the same NFL team. Like, that's stuff people dream of. You know, like, they talk about that as little kids. And now for us to really do it, you know, even though I'm a year ahead of him, it's like, it's a dream come true, honestly.
Really just, a lot of people really don't even get to have this opportunity that we have coming from where we come from. So to even be able to be here together, like, just in that surreal moment, like, together, it's really, like, something you couldn't even dream of. It's like straight out of a book, for real, for real.
DeMar, Dane, you guys passed the test. You know each other well. I don't know if somebody gave you the answers before, but you guys are true friends, which I love to see. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Coffee with the Bills, presented by Tim Hortons.
All right, Dane Jackson and DeMar Hamlin, Maddie. I'd like somebody to, you know, an advanced mathematician to give us how astronomical the odds are to have not two guys from the same college. You do see that from time to time. I wouldn't call that uncommon. But two guys from essentially the same hometown be good enough athletes to make it to the highest level of football, play in the NFL, and play on the same team on top of that. I mean, the number of permutations there to get there, I mean, that's got to be, I don't know, maybe is it in the millions? Like, it's got to be.
Yeah, I agree. We were talking about it this morning, actually, me and a group of our media people, just how slim the chances are to see these guys who grew up together, went to school together, and now are in the Buffalo Bills together. And both of them say they feel very lucky to come out of the town that they did and be at the place that they are. They have some friends that weren't so lucky, and they're big on wanting to provide a view, a good vibe around how people can come out of where they came out of and make it the way that they had. So I really respect those two. They're two great guys, and it's cool to see them playing together right now.
Yeah, no question about it. So good job there by you. We turn now, though, to the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, where we were asking you today on the poll, which is more crucial to the success of the Bills offense going forward. Max says more of what they did in the second half Sunday. Sprinkle in the runs and play action while using the short passes and screens as another run play to suit your strengths and back off the pass rush. The problem is they show signs of this and then go away from it again. Keep on it. And Coach Dable did address that yesterday when, you know, he was asked about not running at all in the first half. And he was explaining, well, first series we did this, second series we backed them off with some screen plays, and in the third series we did this. So they are mixing it up in the passing game to almost double as a run game to try to keep these defenses honest and not trying to tee off on Josh.
And in terms of play action, I mean, this team has been successful a lot when they use play action and when they let Josh Allen kind of decide what he wants to do based on what he sees in the defense, whether that's hand it off to somebody or take it himself or throw it to one of his receivers that's open. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they scheme up these next few teams, especially, I mean, it's not like the game plan is going to be any of the same against the Patriots just because of the weather conditions that they saw against the Patriots on Monday night. But I'm really interested to see how they scheme up against such good defense down the road here when they face the Patriots again.
Kevin on the tweet sheet says, I think Allen's run game will help the rest of the offense click, keeps defenses honest, and is the biggest notable difference from last year. The fly in the ointment here, Matty, obviously is his sprained foot. Even if he's able to play, is he able to run in the fashion that we're used to seeing him run? That could kind of gob up the works a little bit in terms of having that kind of game plan.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to weigh. I mean, he is so good taking it himself and finding those holes when they're there. I mean, over 100 rushing yards in last week's game, but you know, at what cost too? We saw him with the foot sprain in that game, and it could affect him going forward in the next couple of weeks with how they use him in the run game and how they use him in the RPO game, depending on how he feels, how he receives treatment this week. So I would love to say, let him do whatever the heck he wants to do for the rest of the season. But is that the safest option for your most important player on your offense?
Yeah, it's a tough balance for sure. Dinah on the tweet sheet says, O-line, it's not the worst line, but it's not the best line. Anyone thinking Josh should run more needs to remember he showed up after the game in a walking boot. And I think this is the concern that Bills fans have, Maddie. They know he's the most important player on the team, and they also know that if you run him as often as you do in last week's game, week after week, the odds are probably going to go up that he might get an injury that doesn't allow him to finish a game, let alone miss another game after that, which they can't have right now.
Yeah, and you don't want to do the same thing every single game because defenses are going to catch on. If they're going to let Josh do what he wants to do in terms of on the ground, defenses are going to start scheming for that. So it doesn't take too long for a defense to figure out, okay, here's what the team has done the last 3 weeks. Here's what they're usually going to do in this situation or scenario when they see this front or this coverage. So they're going to have to continue to mix it up. And Sean McDermott talked about that at the end of the game. After the game, he said he liked the variety of the offense, and several different players at the end of the game touched the ball, had their hands on the ball, caught passes. So I think that's what we've seen too, is this offense is at its best when we see it be at its most variety, when we see the most guys weaved into it, whether that's running the ball or catching the ball.
Jeremy says the connection between Gabe and Josh is absolutely gorgeous. He needs to be a starter and on the field often. I think we've covered this ground here, even on today's show. So we'll move along to Herb, who says, I want Allen to run some. I get concerned about injuries. Gabe Davis on the field turns into six. He makes those hard catches. He blocks well. He's an awesome route runner, and good things seem to happen with Gabe on the field. No question about it. And, you know, Maddie and I kind of covered this earlier in the show. I thought when we looked at the poll at the outset of the show, Maddie, I said to myself, well, I thought Gabe was going to get a lot of traction there. But I think with some fans knowing Emmanuel Sanders is probably not going to play this week again, people are like, he's going to be in the lineup anyway. I don't need to vote for him in this poll. I'm going to vote for the offensive line. And then that's why we saw the lopsided vote that we did.
Yeah, but Gabe is important to this offense. Emmanuel Sanders is important to this offense. They have some really good pieces at wide receiver who can help in different ways. And I know Isaiah McKenzie, I think, only caught one pass, but I was happy to see him looped back into the offense because I think I thought he was a big part of it last year. And I understand him being the returner. You don't want to weave him into the offense because then that gives him a chance to possibly get hurt. And if he's your guy there, you want him to be your guy there for the rest of the season. But now that we've seen Marquez Stevenson and him kind of split the job there, we'll see what happens going forward. But I love Isaiah McKenzie in the offense as well, so it'll be interesting to see if he's used in games going forward too.
Break time for us here. Maddie and I will close it up next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. Well, Maddie, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the Cleveland Browns have already entered into advanced COVID protocols, and we said they probably won't be the last team. We didn't even get to the end of the show. The Rams have now closed their training facility. They have entered the NFL's intensive protocols, and they just got back from a game last night. So it's pretty crazy to think about what tripped them up and triggered this for them to go the intensive protocols. I mean, they weren't even around the facility on Monday. They were playing in a game. So you have to wonder if Arizona could be impacted just by virtue of being around them. I know, you know, really transmission on the field hasn't happened, but it is an indoor facility. I don't know if that changes the conversation. It's just, I don't like the way this is headed for the league.
Yeah, and I wonder what starts to happen in the playoffs or as we close out the season here, because remember last year it was basically like the playoffs started and the teams went into a true bubble scenario.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's in the conversation here this season, because as we've seen, a lot of the spread has occurred outside of the facility rather than inside yeah. of the facilities of all NFL teams. So something to follow here. I'm sure these two teams aren't going to be the only two teams that go into intensive protocols over the next 4 weeks, especially with the holidays right around the corner. People are going to be with friends, with family members, and we know that this can spread in just about any type of situation, scenario, place, you name it.
Yep. Steve's back tomorrow. We'll see you at 1:00.